going to get started here today. We're going to start with a moment of silence, followed up by the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Crawford, may we have a roll call?
Certainly, we have Eric Davidson.
Here.
Mike Hill.
Here.
Sonia Hurt.
Here.
Ryan Lopez.
Here.
And Richard May.
Present.
Mary Lou Stewart requested to be excused.
I motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right, next on the agenda, police officer recognition. Chief Palmer.
Thank you. I used the microphone here just for a second. If I can call officers Bahulo, Campbell, and Bahulo on this. Gentlemen. So let me describe an incident for you guys real quick. In July of 2024, Officers Ballou, Makuma, and Campbell were alerted by dispatch of a medical emergency in Blaine, to which the fire department was being dispatched. Dispatch often broadcasts these calls as an advisory to police officers in case an officer is in a position to help, but they are not typically law enforcement calls. Regardless of this, the officers drove to the call with emergency lights activated and immediately ran to the patient. The patient was in a bathroom, and Officer Makumalo had to force the door open and then physically drag the patient out of the bathroom to an open area where they could render aid. Officer Campbell checked for a pulse and breathing with the patient, and officers decided that CPR was needed. They immediately began CPR. Officers Makumalo and Ballou worked as a team, taking turns administering CPR for nearly 5 minutes until medics would take over with more advanced care, including the use of an AED. The patient was transported to the hospital, and at last check was in stable condition. Officer Bumalo and Ballou provided direct and immediate life-saving actions that ultimately saved the patient. Without their actions, the patient would likely not have survived. Officer Campbell assisted with the initial assessment and scene stabilization, allowing the officers to focus on the aid they were providing. With the Blaine Police Department, the life-saving award is awarded to officers who perform a life-saving act under extraordinary circumstances. Shall only on the word of the chief and has to have the following circumstances. The officer took direct, immediate, and positive action to preserve the life of another human being who was in danger of dying. The action did prevent the loss of life, and the circumstances of the act were such that any delay in providing assistance would in all probability have resulted in the person's death. Because of these efforts of these three officers, I am awarding Officer Makumalo and Ballou the Life Saving Award Medal, and Officer Campbell the Chief's Commendation. Thank you, gentlemen. Give the award.
Representing the Office of the Washington State Auditor, the team based out of Bellingham that performs the audit each year.
This is the exit conference where we talk about the scope of the audit that we just completed as well as the results. We have provided the council with a packet of information. We are going to be focused on our PowerPoint that we'll be going through, but we'll be referencing where they align, and everything that we're saying verbally is in the packet in writing in some place. So on the next slide, we have the three people who will be presenting today. So my name is Dina Garza. I'm a program manager with our office. Beth Corcoran served as the audit supervisor for this year's audit, and then Heidi Wiley was the audit lead. So you'll hear portions from each of the three of us. The contact information on the slide mirroring in the packet in case there's any questions from anybody after the presentation today. So as I mentioned, we are here representing the results of the audit, and we recognize that those do have an impact. They can matter, whether it's messaging external to the city or internal processes and procedures. And so we make sure that the three main goals of our office are showing up in everything that we're doing during the audit, as well as in today's presentation. And so I just want to touch on those briefly before we actually start talking about the audit. So as you can see on this slide, the first is that our vision as the State Auditor's Office is increased trust in government. Not only having this external third-party validation process, but knowing that the audits are happening, that we are open to the public, and also very wanting to be very transparent in what we're doing. Everything that we audit is published on our website, but also that we're very open throughout the audit process. If there are any questions, we almost joke that there are no secrets in auditing. So even as we're going through day-to-day, if staff have questions, we want to make sure we're explaining why we're auditing it, where the guidance comes from, even best practices that we're seeing around the state. Because that aligns with the third and final goal that I'll speak to today is improved efficiency and effectiveness of government. We are a reporting agency. We are not an enforcement agency. So we want to work collaboratively with all of the governments that we audit. And that includes making suggestions, things we're seeing around the state, best practices, sharing recommendations that can be helpful in moving forward. And so we really make sure that everything that we're interacting with or every interaction is following those three goals. And so hopefully your staff has felt that throughout the audit process, but especially in today's presentation. Along those lines of improved efficiency and effectiveness, our office is more than just the audit process, even though that's what most people interact with us. So before I hand it over, I wanted to talk briefly about our Center for Government Innovation. This is a division of our office that is specifically available just to provide resources. They take common questions that we get, concerns, recommendations from around the state, and they have an entire resource library of guides, such as what you're seeing on the slide. Common areas such as segregation of duties, accounts payable, or EFT recommendations, things that are really commonly helpful, putting together narrative guides, checklists, or even CPE trainings were helpful. So just wanting to make sure that we're plugging that so that you're aware that those are available throughout the year to anyone who's accessing our website, not just finance staff. So with that, I do want to go ahead and hand it over to Heidi, who was the audit lead, to talk about, again, the scope of the audit and then the recommendations.
First, we wanted to thank all of the City of Blaine staff for the timely responses to our audit. And we specifically want to thank Carla Flamine, who was the interim finance director during the audit field work, and she was integral in providing support of the documentation and coordinating the work with other city staff. We worked with several different people. And then when Jennifer came on, she helped with closing out the audit. So at this time, we're going to go to the accountability audit results. If you have your exit packet, it's on page 7 where it starts. And what this slide shows is that it's a clean audit. The city complied with all material respects, with applicable state laws, regulations, and the city's own policies. And provided adequate controls over the safeguarding of public resources. For accountability audits, we do a risk-based audit, so it's a little bit different than financial statement audits. So we're looking at those applicable state laws, city policies, We don't look at every transaction or activity. It's all selected based on the risk that we do during planning. And if you go to the next slide, the areas that we reviewed this year are accounts payable, specifically looking at credit cards and purchase cards, procurement, that's the public works, construction, and professional services. And then as part of planning, we always look at open public meetings, reviewing the minutes, meetings and executive session requirements that are required in the OPMA state law. And then we always look at the financial condition, reviewing for indications of any financial distress, which the city did not have any warning indicators or anything like that. In the audit from the prior year, there was a finding on credit cards and purchase cards. And as part of that finding, we followed up on it, reviewed in the accounts payable section, and determined there are no findings or management letter recommendations, and so it was fully corrected. So we want to commend the city for correcting and implementing our recommendations. And in that summary, you can find the city's response on that, and we did follow up. It's fully corrected. In the audit, you'll notice in the audit report, it does say that we provided some recommendations, and that is in regards to these management letters. They are not part of what you see here on the slide. It's part of your exit packet, but it is not as a finding, so it's not in the audit report. The audit report only says that we provided recommendations. So I wanted to go over the two management letters. The first one is the open public meetings. So for open public meetings, like I said, we do review for compliance of the OPMA state law. So things like, is there a quorum, the documentation of the minutes, actions taken, expected actions that we would expect to see, such as approval of prior audit minutes, approval of expenditures for payroll and disbursements, and compliance with executive session documentation. So what we found in our review, this recommendation is specifically for executive sessions. So we listened to the recordings of the meetings and found some differences between what was in the recordings from what actually happened and what's recorded, documented in the minutes. So some examples are the purpose of the executive session is different between the meetings and the recordings. The announced durations, or if there were extensions, sometimes the extension would not be documented in the minutes, or vice versa, where it would show maybe there was extensions in the minutes documented but not in the recording. And there was one that an executive session occurred in the recording that actually occurred, but was not included in the minutes. So you can find all that detail in your exit packet. It's on page 3. Sorry, I should have said that first. So page 30 is where you'll find all that detail. If you go to page 31, you'll find the management letter for procurement. So for procurement, we look at the laws that are intended to promote openness in government and prevent fraud, collusion, favoritism, and awarding construction, professional services, purchases, any of those using procurement for those contracts. So during review, we did review for public works, and there were no issues there. This is specific to our review of the A&E services. There was a procurement for $307,000 of A&E services. And for that one, we reviewed, and so there's several bullet points here, and I'm just going to try to summarize it. So the first thing is there's confusion between the city's purchasing policy, and then there's a resolution for using the small works roster, and they're not combined together, so they're confusing in which should be used. So the purchasing policy doesn't say anything about using the small works roster. And in this case, for the services, the way that they were procured eventually, so this is the case where there was an advertisement that was originally made, but the company that was selected was not, once they negotiated with the city, the price was too high. So then the city went back out and used the small works roster. And so that's where we're seeing the confusion of the purchasing policy stating that it needs to be advertised to bid. In addition to that, when that second negotiation happened and they submit the request for qualifications, an evaluation needs to happen. And in this case, there was no documentation of that evaluation to show that the requirements that were set were met for that project. In addition to that, the project changed from the original scope of work, and so that should have been re-advertised when that scope of work was changed. In addition to that, we've communicated similar recommendations regarding procurement for A&E services in other audits. And so it's a continued concern that we see, and recommend that the policy and that resolution be combined so that it's more clear on what the processes should be and controls and review of that, and that the documentation be retained for those to support that the policy is followed. So now we'll go on to the financial audit results, and you'll find this audit report on page 15 in your exit packet. It's a clean audit. We issue, and it's considered unmodified, which means it's clean. Our opinion is issued in accordance with the BARS manual, accounting manual. The city is a cash basis versus GAAP. So that adverse opinion that you see, it doesn't mean anything bad. We're just saying that the city is following Washington State BARS manual versus the U.S. GAAP. So it doesn't mean anything bad. And we also use the government auditing standards as part of our audit. So clean audit, which means we identified no significant deficiencies in internal control. There were no deficiencies that we considered to be material weaknesses, and there were no instances of non-compliance that were material to the financial statements of the city. So very clean. And if we go to the next slide, there's some required communications that we're required to communicate to you. So we didn't identify any material misstatements during the audit, and there's one uncorrected misstatement that was provided for review. It's a very minimal item and would not be material or anything to the financial statements, but we're required to provide that. And my understanding is that's already been corrected for the 2024 financial statements. In addition, we are required to review management override of controls. So what we do is we review journal entries for like transfers and end of year journal entries, review that those are reasonable and make sense for what should be for the financial statements. And there were no concerns noted. In In addition, during the financial statement audit, we reviewed for 2022, so this was a 2022-2023 financial statement review, and in 2022 there was a new GASB statement for leases that the information added new lease liabilities and right to use assets, changes in the presentation and the measurement of previously reported capital leases. This is not material or anything to the city's financial statements, but we review to make sure that implementation is correct. So it could affect the notes to the financial statements and the presentation, adding a note to it, and then the schedule of liabilities if the city has any liabilities. So we reviewed that and determined that the accounting standard was properly implemented. There was also an audit, so there was no single audit, the federal program review that we do on behalf of federal agencies. The coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds program met the criteria to have an attestation type of audit. So all we reviewed for the compliance of that federal program was for the activities allowed or unallowed and allowable costs and cost principles. So we reviewed the federal program, but we did not need to review all of the different requirements that normally we do. And so there's an additional report on page 15, I might have written the wrong page number there, but you can find that there. Normally the federal program audit is included in the financial statement, but since this is a completely different type of audit, it's a separate report, so it's not one that you would normally see. There were no concerns noted for that audit. It was completely clean. So I'm through with all the reports and everything, and I'm going to turn it over to Beth now to do closing remarks.
Okay, I've got some administrative details. Our reports, the copies that you have still have the draft watermark, as it shows on the slide as well. Once we have everything totally finalized and we get our management representation letter as well, we will publish that report on our website. There is a link here as well to sign up for a subscription service with that. You can sign up for any parameters that you're interested in. If you want to see findings for other cities or reports for other cities or just plain, but you can set up the parameters to be notified by email once that is published on the public website. And that also triggers the release of an audit survey. And we do want our audits to have value, and we do care and appreciate any feedback that you have. It is forwardable. It will go to Jennifer, and it can be passed along. And so I'd just like to thank you in advance if you have any feedback for us. At the beginning of the audit, we provided an engagement letter with estimated costs for the three procedures that we did, and our costs are in alignment with that. The next audit will just be financial statement, but it will be a federal grant compliance audit. So it'll be kind of a step above the attestation that we get. And we provided an estimated cost for that in the exit packet as well for budgeting purposes. And we've also shared that with Jennifer too. So that's what we have. Do you have any questions for us?
Any questions? Yeah, I have a question. Regarding open public meetings, we're coming into a new kind of an era where a lot more things are available on the website, and a lot less things are in paper format. So the discrepancies of executive sessions and their extensions,
seems like, although in some cases we didn't have it on the recording and on paper both at the same time, it seemed that you were amply able to determine that there were extensions and what the total time was. And so does proper compliance require it to be both paper and sound, or is it required to absolutely have paper no matter what, or is it okay that sometimes it's represented in one way that you were able to find simply by looking?
I would say that the way that the RCW is written, it really focuses on prompt and accurate recording of the minutes, and I think focuses more towards, because of the way the RCWs are written, towards the written record. I do recognize exactly what you're saying, that the recordings were available, that we were able to see that the announcement followed the law, and so I think sometimes it's just the proper recording after, and a little bit of reliance on the council when you're approving them during the next meeting to ensure that that is an accurate record. But as far as the minutes being accurate versus compliance with RCW, those are two different state laws, and so we definitely recognize that as well.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to the consent agenda. Items listed below will be enacted by one motion. If a separate discussion is desired on an item, that item may be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda at the request of the council member. First, approval bills. $544,304.14. Approval of the wire register, $286,231.76. Approval of the August 12, 2024 special city council minutes. Approval of resolution 1954-24, declaring certain property as surplus. And lastly, requesting city council to authorize city manager to sign a funding contract with the Department of Commerce for downtown revitalization project grant funding. I make a motion.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right, consent agenda is passed. On to council action items. First up, city council acceptance of restoration of NB Plover passenger ferry.
Thank you. On November 27, 2023, council authorized the city manager to do a small contract works with Drayton Harbor Maritime for the restoration of the Plover ferry. We request at this time the work has been done and the contract will be considered as complete.
What's the last thing you said?
Pardon?
What's the last thing you said about that?
Just that the contract being complete.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay, do I have any discussion?
First of all, I would like to commend Drayton Harbor Maritime for an outstanding service to the city for 28 years of maintaining and servicing the Plover. And I would like to set the record straight. The facts of the matter are that Richard Sturgill, in his capacity of maintaining the Plover, was paid $3,000 a year. Not thousands, but $3,000 a year for a few hours a week to check on the Plover and maintain it. And Meredith, unfortunately, I don't know her last name, Meredith, who devoted hours and hours and some of her own funds, never took a penny from any of the money that was distributed to Drayton Harbor Marine. She did not receive any monetary compensation. And I spoke with Richard Sturgill this afternoon, and he informed me that he has decided to officially retire and no longer be associated with the Plover in any manner. And Drayton Harbor Maritime will no longer be associated with the Plover.
Okay, thank you.
I do have one question for Mr. Ryan and for Mr. Gandhi. It's come to my attention that the Plover was seriously damaged this weekend, and I would like to know if our insurance will cover that, and are we going to go out to bid to find someone to repair it?
Sure. The
Plover wasn't seriously damaged. The Plover fell apart this weekend. The stern, well, we've got pictures later to show you. There's a plate that goes over the stern, the corners of the stern, and it is so rotten back there that that plate fell off. While the Plover was motoring, they were undergoing some of their required trainings for the Coast Guard, and a passerby at Cipriano actually waved the boat down and said, "Hey, your corner fell off of the boat." They saw it and they recorded it. And so, yeah, we do have pictures for the council of the rotten stern that fell apart on the Plover this weekend.
So, are we covered by insurance on that?
What? Deputy Kennedy.
That's the weather. The Coast Guard's weather checking that boat. I mean, don't they do a survey on that
boat? Deputy Mayor. The Coast Guard can only flag what they can see. The Coast Guard flagged the rot they could see, this rot they couldn't see, and no, our insurance doesn't cover just an old rotten stern.
And are we
going
to go out to have this prepared, or is that something we can do in-house?
Deputy Mayor, this happened Sunday. Plans aren't finalized yet. Coast Guard structural inspector will be coming up Wednesday to take a look at the transom. There's likely that we're seeing only the beginning of the rot, and there's likely that there's more rot. So plans will be made once we know the extent of the rot on the stern and the Plover.
Thank you.
So does that mean that the Plover didn't pass whatever Coast Guard inspection they need to, and we cannot use it currently?
Deputy Mayor. The Coast Guard passed the inspection of the repair work, but the Coast Guard was unaware of this rot on the stern. And the captains that are operating the vessel, the damage is to the extent they're not comfortable operating it because water will come in to the boat. And so it's likely that some sort of repair will have to be made to it. We may be looking at transom repairs if we want the Plover to continue to sail.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions.
Please.
My understanding was that a lot of the boat was replaced. There's an old thing about if you replace bit by bit all the bricks in the bridge, it's not that bridge anymore, it's some other new bridge. So I had an impression that a lot of this wasn't the original Plover anymore. It was actually something in the shape of the original Plover, but it was mostly new materials. So I guess I misunderstood that. Do any of you have an idea of, as a percentage, what percentage of the Plover's materials were replaced with new materials during this past year and a half?
No, we don't have a percentage. That perception was provided not by city staff. What was replaced was the keel and work on the bow. There was virtually nothing done to the stern of the Plover.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so the parts that were replaced is because they were perhaps in the condition where we're looking at this part was rotted. I see. So that would say that those doing the repairs were aware that the length of time and duration and type of use that had occurred for the boat had rendered some of it in a replaceable condition, but they did. It would appear that they did not that they repaired and replaced some parts of it without checking in to see if the rest had the equal amount of wear and tear. Would that be accurate?
Deputy Mayor, one thing I promised Council, I don't know if Council members, but when we were talking about the additional cost for the Plover, and I was asked if this would be the last time we're spending money, I promised that it wouldn't, right? This is an old wooden boat, and it's going to always be something. While we were sea trialing the Plover, I didn't go out, but to turn the engine off on the Plover, you pulled a piece of string inside the cowling. Just things like that were discovered that aren't acceptable, aren't safe. And so that has now been repaired. With other things, but we've got a rotten transom on our hands.
Could you explain what I'm looking at here?
Deputy Mayor.
Yeah.
You're looking at what was likely the starboard side of that vessel, with the keel being on the left-hand side of that picture and the starboard side of the vessel on the main face of the picture.
Can you zoom out so I can see, is that the whole picture?
There's a wooden plate that wraps around it, almost like a piece of a corner trim, and that's the plate that fell off.
You guys have a picture of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay, that's where it is.
If you look to the other, to the port side of the vessel, you'll see that plate up there that's right on the corner. And that plate is what fell off into the sea.
And that's an access plate for something?
I don't know that answer.
No, I believe he described correctly as trim, like the way, you know, on the corner of a cabinet or something, when two things join, you put a nice little piece of trim over it, and a piece of trim was covering that. Would that be an accurate depiction? I've been involved in the purchasing and sale of quite a number of boats of this size and larger, and the amount of money we've spent on this repair is a higher amount of money than can get to a boat this size, from what I've seen. And so I hope we think very carefully what our next steps are, because we now have a sunken cost that so much of this boat has been fixed, will just a little bit more money make it completely fixed, and we have to identify whether or not what we should have done a year and a half or 2 years ago is go and buy a similar boat in good condition for about half that much money, paint it and call it the new Plover. That may be something we should have considered then, but now all we have is bad options to choose between.
Yeah, because that transom dropping all the way across there, that could be a 100-some thousand, at least maybe 200,000 to fix that.
And at the moment, the captains are worried that water is getting in through there, or is water getting in somewhere else through there at the moment?
Deputy Mayor, water is still coming in to the vessel from the repair area. We'd like to believe that's common. Wood swells as it sits in the water, and we think that water that will come in will eventually stop. But the captains are worried about ocean coming into that area of the vessel.
All right, moving back to the council action items, can I get a motion for City Council to accept the restoration of the Plover passenger ferry?
I move that we approve it.
Can I get a second? All those in favor?
Sorry. We've got the motion. I actually have a question here. What is it that us approving this motion will do? Can staff tell me what this motion is?
By accepting projects as final, you authorize staff to release any retainage with the project. We hold retainage that is part of almost all of our projects, and we don't release that retainage until council has said it's final. Now, we're still working with the contractor, Great Harbor Maritime, on some documents we need to release that retainage, but that's what that motion authorizes us to do.
So us voting in favor of this says, job well done, here's your money.
Deputy.
Go ahead.
You voting in favor of this motion says, job done, and then staff determine how to settle up the finances based on what your observations of the report.
Would you be under obligation to give them the rest of the money and say, hey, job done, you're done here, your responsibilities to the city are finished?
Deputy Mayor, we have the ability to release the amount of funding that's remaining on the project. So in this particular case, there's, and I may turn to our finance officer, Ms. Vidal, to answer that question, but we've got around $8,000 remaining on the project that we're withholding in retainage. The liquidated damage is around $5,500, and then there's also costs associated with the operation of the vessel that were paid that shouldn't have been paid. And so we're working with Drayton Harbor Maritime to square up those costs. Our initial estimate is that Drayton Harbor Maritime likely owes us, the city, a check back. And again, we're working with them on that. But this allows us to release that retainage and square up that final financial paperwork.
But you're going to have some discretion in that regard?
Deputy Mayor. Absolutely.
Okay, so us voting yes does not take away your discretion?
That's correct.
Okay. So one question and one just kind of statement. Now, the question for the operation funds, how much was released and what was that supposed to cover for what length of time?
Deputy Mayor. We're doing the best we've got ahead, and we can get more details. We can actually Jennifer could pull the spreadsheet up. Great Harbor Maritime submitted a number of operational costs in the early part of the year when it was likely that they were going to be the operator of the Plover. Things like storage costs, insurance costs, things of that nature. And what we found later is that there wasn't a signed maintenance and operation contract. So that check should not have been provided in absence of the signed maintenance and operations contract. That's what we've informed Great Harbor Maritime of, and that's what we're working to get those dollars back.
And well, and then my comment is, I was assuming that the Plover was ready to go, because everything I've been seeing was that it was ready to go, and I just found out today that it's not. So I don't feel comfortable voting for this until we have somebody do another once-over on it. Maybe only 2 weeks, waited a year and a half. So, I mean, I would be voting no to this.
This has nothing to do with the work that Great Harbor did.
Obviously, or they would have done it.
I guess my understanding is we asked them to, let's say, we have 10 fixes you need to do. They have fixed those 10 things. This is outside of the original scope. So what we're doing today is recognizing we asked you to fix, you know, number 1 through 10. They did that.
I understand.
So we're, I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, we're just recognizing that and saying, okay, that's done. This is something completely different.
Exactly. This is totally different. You replace your fuel pump, and then the water pump goes out. You don't go back and say, whoa, I'm not going to pay you for that.
Okay, so we have a motion.
If you get a quote, though, on your water pump, and then they charge you twice as much, then you have to rinse, which is kind of what happened here. So
I don't know. It just seems those guys, I don't know enough about those, but I wish someone would look at, like, I mean, we got a ton of fishermen down there. How, I don't know, people can, like, they got machines now. You can put up to anything and tell you if it's good or bad, right? So, I mean, they had that thing for a long time. I guess you couldn't see it, but still, you know, that thing got checked over pretty good, and then just to dry out the water and back and fall off. I'm not a ship guy, so, you know, I believe that this whole thing has come down to, it's gotten so, nowadays you can't run it like you used to. And I think Harbor Maritime has done us a great job. But I just don't think they're up with, I mean, they can run the boat, they can do that, but all this type of stuff, and
financial. They're not going to be doing that anymore.
Yeah, I know, and I want to congratulate them, but I also want to say, I think this is the best move for us to take it in our own hands so we can control it so we don't have this.
Yeah, I do have a question from staff here. Wasn't their contract to do is that we looked at, oh, this front part of the boat needs work, and basically the contract broke down to, hey, fix the front part of this boat? Or was the contract to get this boat up to being seaworthy?
No, that's not.
Their
contract was to fix the items called out by the U.S. Coast Guard. U.S. Coast Guard had about 30, again, I'm giving it off the top of my head, we can verify if we like any of these details, but the U.S. Coast Guard enumerated a list of things that had to be fixed for that vessel to sail. They were contracted to fix those things.
Okay.
This is different.
So that list was kind of an appendix A. They were just fix the stuff that the Coast Guard said was kind of what they're okay. Because if it weren't for that, if it was just, hey, make this seaworthy, then I'd be asking, when they found rot in one part, why didn't they just have a general presumption? Perhaps there's rot in all sorts of other parts, and that's what I would be seconding on this point.
We may be jumping to conclusions. Why don't we all wait until we get an actual analysis to see what the rot is and the damage is going to be?
We have a vote.
Okay, so we got a motion on the floor. Can I get a second?
I think we got a motion on the second.
We did. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
Nay. So good.
Nay.
2-4-3 nay. So motion did not pass.
You'll be able to bring this back to us.
And this has nothing to do. This has nothing to do with we give the okay to fix a trend to that, nothing to do with it, right? I mean,
Deputy Mayor, what staff would be looking for from council is, when would you like this item to come back? We will have a structural inspector from the Coast Guard up Wednesday, but just to be very clear, Drayton Harbor Maritime is not responsible for repairing the transom of the boat.
Yeah.
So even if the transom is found to be unseaworthy, that has nothing to do with our contract with Drayton Harbor Maritime.
Yeah. What would the staff recommendation have been about this boat?
Staff recommendation is to allow us to close out the contract with Drayton Harbor Maritime, complete the financial paperwork, get the required documents we need to assure the state that sales tax and all of those types of things, prevailing wages were paid, et cetera, and then that's completely closed out. And then we treat this item as separate.
I'd like to amend my vote to a yes vote. I'd like to change my vote to a yes. I'd like the staff to be able to do what they need.
Deputy Mayor, so yes. Robert's rules would say that there is the motion failed, right? So according to Robert's rules, somebody from the majority side, in this case would be the nay vote, so one of the council members who voted nay would move to bring the item back to council.
That's what I'm doing. I'm asking for it to be revisited.
That would need to be seconded, and that would need to be voted on for the item to come back to council for consideration, and then a new vote on the contract if that motion is successful.
Yeah. Would we do that now, or would we do that in new business
right now? Totally up to council. Totally.
Okay. I voted as she seconded it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. All right. Motion passes 4-1.
Okay, so now the motion is back in front of the item's back in front of council.
That was just going to have the vote. Yeah.
This is going to take a long time, like an hour.
I just have those hands. We're going to do it right.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We just had the auditors here, so we're about
to. I move that we finalize the contract and allow the city manager to do what he needs to do to finalize this.
Have a second. Okay, we will now officially vote. All for?
Oh, aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Abstain.
4-0-1.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, next one. Request for vacation east half of Valley abutting the westerly lanes of lot 9 through 15. Chair.
Thank you. Drayton County submitted a request for vacation of the alleyway. This was a part of during the initial process, we did not realize, but later found out during the review process that in order for the project to go ahead, this alleyway location is also required. So Drayton County submitted a petition. We had a public hearing on July 22nd, 2024. There were no comments recorded. So we bring it back to the council with option with three council decision. Council can either pass the ordinance without any condition. Second option is the council can pass the ordinance with conditions. The third is pass a motion to deny the proposed location. So staff recommends approving the motion with an ordinance with conditions as stipulated in the RSC.
So my understanding, the city will be receiving compensation for the right-of-way itself to be credited towards the street fund. Do you know how much, roughly?
I haven't looked at it, but I have got appraisals. So the appraisal is already done, so 100% of the appraisal value will be...
Do you know what that appraisal value ended up being?
Just to see that...
Are we allowed to discuss that before it's finalized?
Deputy Mayor,
yes.
My recommendation to council, if we wanted to talk about real estate value, that we adjourn to executive session and then come out of executive session for any action.
But if he just wants to know what it's appraised for, that's just a matter of fact, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, it was just out of curiosity.
We're not going to probably negotiate this.
No,
right,
but
we do.
What's that recommendation?
Staff recommends approving the location request with the condition attached to the location.
You know, I've voted over the years to do a lot of vacation and stuff, but I take them seriously because it's, you know, it's a matter of giving away property that we have and how does that affect the neighbors and stuff. So I do have a few questions. Specifically, what are these current lots zoned at? That's probably a question for Alex. What are they zoned at? And then what would the owner having this continuation, how would that change the density of that area? So.
Deputy Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I believe the property is zoned residential medium density, and vacating the alley would allow them to build across the alley area, basically to span it with buildings. So it doesn't really give them much density, but it allows them a much more efficient building envelope and footprint.
And medium density is wider than a shell for these properties?
It's approximately 12 units per acre.
12 per acre.
Some handy zoning map right here. I believe that's correct. Residential medium density.
Noted on the map is approximately in terms of area, what are we looking at?
It's on 200, it's 200.
210
by 20. So 210 by 20 actually.
Say that again?
210 by 20.
So about 4,200 square feet.
Approximately an acre.
Well, he's trying to build more, better house. Maybe he's going to put some people in. Well, that's what we're working for. I don't know.
I don't know. Question.
I know that we allow this to go back to the property owners.
Can I get a second? So motion's been made for the city to vacate east half of the alley abutting the westerly lines of lot 9 through 15.
I second.
All for it?
Aye.
All right, we'll call a vote. Okay. The deputy mayor rephrased it as it was in the agenda, so it's properly formatted for the actual vote. Motion passes. All right, next up, well field and chlorine building fencing. Once again.
Yeah. So this is just a small contract also like for fencing of our well field area. There are two sections that we need to fence. One is a chlorine building because chlorine is considered as harmful and hazardous. So we need to fence it up. So that is basically a section of 45 by 22. And then the access to the well field, that's 531 linear feet. So the total cost for that is $43,981.50.
That is
$43,981.50.
Did that go out to bid?
We actually, since it was less than 75,000, so we called the three contractors, so they showed up on site and they gave their prices. Two of them gave their prices, the third one didn't show up.
Is that an issue, the fact that the third one didn't show up? Should we get a third one, or are we within compliance if we go with this?
We're in compliance if they're on the small works roster. Anything under $350,000, we can use the small works roster for their work.
Does that seem like a reasonable cost to you?
So the second bid came up at around $57,000.
All right, are there any further questions?
Yeah.
If not, could I get a
motion? I have one more question.
Oh, sure.
I can understand the fencing for the chlorine, but what's the justification for the other one, for the well field?
It's basically like we wanted to keep the well field enclosed for trespassing, and other people walking into our welfare area.
Could they sabotage it or damage it?
It's safety purpose, actually.
It's what?
For the safety of our wells and our area.
And we've gone how many decades without it? Several?
Since Mr. Kane came out here and settled, I don't know.
I'm concerned about that expense.
All right, I'm going to put it to a vote. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Can I get a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
You got it, Mr.
All right, motion passes.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to commission committee and board reports. First up, planning commission.
Yes, Deputy Mayor, our Planning Commission is scheduled to continue a public hearing on September 12th at 6 p.m. They are working on a downtown zoning text amendment to increase the height limit in the Water View District by 12 feet, going from 36 to 48 feet. They're also considering some appurtenances for things like elevator towers and rooftop decks. So those would be potentially allowed. They're talking a lot about rooftop uses and so forth and things like that. So the bigger news report though would be that the height increase. They also held the original public hearing, the first public hearing for this on August 8th, and we'll see where that goes. Hopefully, if they only had four commissioners at their last meeting, so they didn't want to take action on it. And once Planning Commission makes a recommendation, we'll bring it before City Council for a final decision.
I have a question there. So when you say an increase to 48 feet plus, if you want to have some, whatever party deck and the elevator, the elevator mechanisms or whatever, is there any limit on the size of the elevator bed? I mean, is it limited to just the actual size you need to do that, or could someone fudge it and wind up making, a veritable penthouse apartment up there and say it's just part of the elevator machine room?
And Deputy Mayor? Yes, it would be limited just to the mechanical features and the elevator specifically.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, if there's no more questions, we'll move on to the Tourism Advisory Committee.
Yes, the Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee, or BTAC, currently has the tourism grant window open. So the city's accepting grant applications for tourism-related projects. That was originally posted July 17th on the city's website and in the Northern Light. There should be another announcement in the Northern Light this week. Applications are due September 9th at 9 a.m. The BTAC committee will be meeting on September 17th in a retreat-style setting. They will be discussing the preliminary budget and looking at a strategic planning exercise that they conducted at their last meeting. Just regarding the preliminary tourism budget, the revenue is on track from last year. So it was a very good year last year. BTAC will be considering the tourism budget. And then in other news related to tourism, there's a couple fun events coming up. Cattoberfest will be in Marine Park on September 14th to benefit the food bank and being conducted by Beach Cat. And then the Gateway's Oktoberfest is September 21st. And then Blaine's Oyster Fest and Harbor Harvest will be Saturday, October 12th, and we'll be closing a section of Peace Portal Drive, and there'll be a lot of festivities going down there. And I do have this handout, one for each of the council members. I could hand to you in a moment. That is being published in the Mount Baker Experience magazine. It's in the front cover here. And this magazine, I just wanted to take a moment to let you know. It's great coverage out there. It's circulated on the Washington State ferry system, so the Bainbridge ferry route down to Seattle and over to Bainbridge Island, Edmonds Kingston ferry route, and then the Anacortes San Juan Island ferry route. So really great exposure, getting Blaine out there and some of the fun things we're doing. So that's it.
All right, thank you.
I wanted to point out, and I wanted everybody to be aware, that the gentleman who owned TC Trading, if you don't know, he sold it and got a decent price for it. And he owns two buildings behind the IGA shopping center. One, the smaller building that accommodates, has three basketball courts in it. He paid to put a hardwood floor into it for his own money. So that his son could participate with other teams and play basketball. He also would love to use his other property to build a very large sports complex that would accommodate pickleball, basketball, various other sports, and possibly a mezzanine for a running track. And every time we talk about bringing things to Blaine that would benefit our community and especially our youth, we say, well, who's going to pay for it, and where's the link? Those are the two things I always have thrown at me. Well, here's a situation where a person has the money, is willing to donate it, and he has the land. We just need to be flexible and accommodating and work with him in a positive manner so that we can adjust the zoning in that area to accommodate it. I know a lot of other communities where they have sports facilities in their manufacturing zones, and Mr. Winger assures me that this is going to be addressed in the comprehensive plan. So I just want everybody to take note of that. Please don't forget.
And I hope that would be in a public-private partnership with the Labor State Parks and Rec.
Yes, I will.
District, yeah.
Very cool. Thank you. All right, moving to department reports. Sir.
Nothing further.
Thank you. Public Works.
I have updates for Circuit 11. We are moving forward with the design. We are almost around more than 60% design completed. At the same time, we are doing the engineer's estimate so that we can figure out, you know, what the estimate will look like, and you know, any long lead item if we need to order them, we'll do it right away. All of it on Circuit 17 also. All the walls and corners are in the ground right now. We are waiting for a heavy conductor, a large conductor, and a switch that is still to be, that's delaying. Once we receive it, probably by the end of October or November, once we install it, then Circuit 17 will be completed.
Is it a switch delay or a manufacturing delay?
Yeah. So, and four updates.
Okay, we're
all
good.
All right, thank you. We covered the, I don't think there's anything more to say about that. So, moving on to finance.
Thank you. So, the utility customer grant through the Washington Families Clean Energy Credits Program, so far we've received $101,200. So 506 customers have qualified for the grant, and we'll have the balance of those initial grants posted timely, which is this week, to finish this week. The grant is still open through September 15th, 2024, and so you can go to WashingtonCleanEnergyCredits.com to see if you're eligible and apply through there through September 15th, 2024. The city received additional funding from Washington State sales tax from the audit period January 2015 through December 2018. Some funds were coded to be received by the city of Blaine, and they were for a project out of BP. However, that project was a wholesale distributor project and should not have ever have any sales tax paid on it. So normally, if the city receives sales tax and it's erroneous, like the people who prepared the return coded it to blame by mistake, we still get to keep those funds. But because this was a twofold error, that those funds should have never had any sales tax paid on them at all, the money got clawed back. So it was in the amount of $48,409.88. The last thing is that we are on track with our Tyler Technologies update. So the financial portion will be brought online in October. Payroll has been pushed out to February, so that way it's not, it was originally scheduled for December, which is a busy time and the last payroll of the year. It's not a great time to bring on a new payroll system. And so we've scheduled that to February, and then the utilities will be brought online in March, and we'll have people on site from Tyler to help us with those transition and trainings as we get everyone moved on board to the new system.
Very good.
Thank you.
There is nothing on the agenda, but Chief Funk, do you have anything? All right. Moving on to calendars. September 2nd, city offices will be closed. Coming up for September 9th, study session for the utilities budget. And looks like September 12th, Public Works Advisory Board meeting. Is there any council unfinished business? Yeah. Written public comment to the city council is included in the city's website. The public comment received prior to 3 p.m. on the day city council meeting will be entered into the agenda packet for that meeting. Written public comment received after 3 p.m. will be included in the following regular meeting agenda packet. Written public comment can be sent to citycouncil@cityofwayne.com. Moving on to council new business and dialogue. Okay. If not, I will go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 7:00.